Will the Senate come back to order, please? Oh, where's Mr. We have 16, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Yep, we got them now. These are all committed to hold, right? Okay. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file. Well, hold a second. Let me turn your microphone on. Got it. To start over. Mr. Vice President, I move the Senate resolve itself in committee of the whole for the last time this session to consider bills on general file. Senator Boehner, are you ready? You've heard the motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senator Boehner, it's all yours. And there's an official transcript.
Okay. Cool. Okay. The committee of the whole will come to order. Senator Hastert. Hope.
Mr. Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, with us today are a couple members of Sweetwater County 2 School Board. And it's always nice when people from Sweetwater County, especially from Green River, come all the way over to see us in action here. So we have Robin Stice and Brenda Russa. If you guys would stand up and welcome to the Senate.
First bill for our consideration is House Bill 6. Syrian Clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill 6, Research and Wildlife Information Confidentiality, sponsored by the Joint Travel Committee, an act relating to public records, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi, Dalton, Barnard, Boehner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Moniz, Chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 6, Research and Wildlife Information Confidentiality, do pass. And for an explanation of this bill, I'll yield to Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this bill is a pretty straightforward bill. House Bill 6, what it does is just gives the research and wildlife confidentiality. For example, with the wolf or the grizzly bear, we don't want people to know where their dens are and go disturb the animals. So it protects the research information. So the heart of the bill is on page 2. Basically, we add in that bona fide research by a state institution, we add an agency or any other person, because if they provide it to the state, for example, if we hire an institution to do that, or if we hire a single person to go out and study that, they would be covered as well. And then Romanette 8 just says that the sensitive wildlife data in the custody, which could be used to determine the specific location of an individual animal or group of animals, is confidential. And I stand for any questions on the bill.
Any questions? Seeing none, looks like you're ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 6, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. House Bill 6 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 163. Will the reading clerk read in the bill?
House Bill 163, Engrossed, Physician Non-Compete Clause, sponsored by Representative Nicholas, an act relating to professions and occupations. It was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boehner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
It looks like there is a standing committee amendment. Would the clerk read that in?
House Bill 163, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, page 1, line 14.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 163 do pass. The Standing Committee Amendment, it's been read in. I move Standing Committee Amendment, and I yield to Senator Wasserberg to explain both the amendment and the bill.
Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will take you through the bill very quickly. Essentially, what this bill does is if a doctor enters into a non-compete covenant with a local hospital, it allows them to leave the hospital and then the hospital to be compensated, or the practice that he leaves to be compensated as a result of him leaving, or he or she leaving. And I will walk you through this bill first. On page 1, line 11, you will find Wyoming Statute 3326.104, where the bill reads non-compete clauses. At line 13, the bill states, any covenant not to compete in an employment, partnership, or business agreement that restricts the right of a physician required to be licensed under this chapter to practice. And then continuing on page 2, lines 4 through 7, the bill states, all other provisions of employment, partnership, or other business agreement that are otherwise enforceable at law shall remain in full force and effect, including, and then on page 2, lines 9 and 11, provisions that require the payment of reasonable damages upon termination of the agreement. At lines 16 through 20, the bill states, all covenants not to compete shall provide that a physician will not be prohibited from providing continuing care and treatment to any patient during the course of the illness, even after the contract or employment has been terminated. And then on page 3, lines 5 through 8, the bill states, the act shall not apply to any employment, partnership, or other business agreement originally entered into prior to the effective date of this act. So in other words, doctors who are affected prior to this cannot access this act. So, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill, and I would ask that the Standing Committee amendment be taken up at this time.
Oh, that's been readily moved. Go ahead, Senator Washburn.
Okay, to introduce the amendment is almost as long as the bill. The amendment comes to us from a former Speaker of the House who lives in Gillette and actually in my district, who represents the hospital, and also from a former president of the Wyoming Senate who lives in Laramie. And so they got together over the weekend, and I think they went through 18 different rewrites, and I think it makes the bill much, much better. So if I could walk you through this. On page 1 of the amendment, line 14, the word reasonable is inserted so that the sentence reads, any covenant not to compete in an employment, partnership, or other business agreement that unreasonably restricts the right of the physician. And I think this portion of the amendment improves the bill. On page 2, line 1, the amendment inserts within any community of Wyoming so that essentially this only applies to our state. But the sentence would read, to practice medicine within the community of Wyoming upon termination of the agreement is void except. And then continuing on page 2, line 14, C is inserted, and it says, provisions with direct solicitation of employees as long as such restrictions do not limit the rights of other employees. And then D, provisions requiring physicians not to use confidential or proprietary information of the other contracting party. So in other words, information from a local hospital or practice can't be carried with the doctor when he leaves. On page 2, line 20, the amendment inserts, all covenants not to compete shall provide that the physician will not be prohibited from providing care and treatment to any patient during the course of the acute illness, even after the contract or employment has been terminated. And continuing on, the amendment inserts, when considering the reasonableness of damages imposed by the contract upon termination of the agreement, whether liquidated or to be calculated, any tribunal shall consider. And then there's a list of 6 things that the court will consider on a non-compete clause. And, Mr. Chairman, that is the amendment. And so I stand for questions on that amendment. I think that the 6 requirements for the court to consider are very reasonable. I think they improve the bill considerably. And I would ask for your favorable vote on the amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment certainly makes the bill better, so I'd vote aye.
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment flies against the face of free market, one, two, capitalism, three, principles of contract law. This conflates concepts of both tort litigation and contract law in a variety of ways. This is a bad amendment. I encourage you to vote no. More specifically, to get into the details as how the amendment relates to the bill. Most specifically, this amendment actually eviscerates the entire purpose of subdivision A on paragraph A on page 2, lines 9 through 11. I'm not sure why or how that provision doesn't become superfluous when we look at its relationship to paragraph B on lines 13 through 14 on 2 and how that interplays with the amendment and all of those particular notions that a court is to consider of whether or not liquidated damages are appropriate or whether or not the breach of contract done by the physician, because what this does is it outlines the term for how a doctor can safely breach a contract of a covenant not to compete and outlines those terms. Very specifically, how some of those concepts are conflated are when we look at the amendment, Roman numeral number 4. So it requires that the court consider that the amount of income received by the practice or hospital on account of the physician while employed with the hospital or practice. So when the court is asked to analyze the damages that the physician has caused by breaching their contract, the court actually has to consider how much revenue the doctor brought in. That's a tort principle. It is not found in contract law, and you are carving out a very special exception for this particular class of persons. It's a bad idea. I urge your opposition against this amendment and against the bill.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a question, and I would put this perhaps to one or more of the it is on the amendment. Thank you. There's kind of, as I understand non-competes, there's kind of a circularity here that I'm not following, which is I thought these were invalid unless the person seeking to enforce it would prove that they were reasonable as to time, place, and scope or something like that. And otherwise they were void, and you never got to the question of damages. We're going to spend all this time on damages, and I'm not even sure that it has any application to this in any context. I mean, I'm not even understanding whether we're really helping or hurting with this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's some trepidation that I get up and argue with the real attorneys, particularly the practicing attorneys in the body. The problem we've got here with the amendment that I think makes it a little difficult is that there's a federal law in this area, the Star Clause, and they were having to try very carefully to be consistent with those, and I am told that that's important and this does get them consistent. So it's a useful addition to bill. With regard to the one specific thing, why do you look at the income? And I'm not sure this is part of the Star Clause, but why do you look at the income that the practice received from the physician? What you're trying to do is make sure, we had a lot of testimony in committee and frankly out of committee too, that one of the troubles here is that it's expensive to go recruit physicians if they can leave you too quickly. Then there's an incentive not to go out and recruit again. You can't recover the cost that you have. So you do have to look at seeing what the actual damages were. How much did that physician contribute before they left the practice? Did they contribute enough to cost to contribute or resolve those costs? And that's important. And for those reasons, I do urge you to adopt the amendment.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I just fail to understand why this wouldn't be worked out when you're hiring. You know, when you hospital's interviewing a physician, they say, you know, we're in a rural area, we want to give you an incentive to stick around for a while, so there's this penalty in the contract, whatever it is, if you leave before a certain date. That's common, but that's between willing parties negotiating. Why do we have to get in this space?
Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the answer to that question, which is a good concern, is that it's not a fair negotiation. It's typically a captive negotiation where it's impossible to say no realistically if you want that job. When you have the monopolistic control of the healthcare facilities and all of the entities basically monopolistically do the same type of contract, it isn't a free negotiation where you get to say, well, I don't think this condition's fair. Well, all right, then don't come here. Everyone does this. So if it were a free market, that would be one thing, where there was competition. We control this market. This is the healthcare sector. This is so controlled in detail at the federal and state level, there isn't a robust and healthy marketplace where anybody's ideas can come forward and different people will be hiring. In fact, this is theoretically an attempt to provide for a better free market possibility with the non-compete in place. I do understand the idea on one hand that if we're trying to prevent a contract, that we're trying to diminish the free market, but on the other hand, we're doing quite the opposite, where we're trying to allow for the possibility of that negotiation to take place because that's not being held over and you can move about in the free marketplace. What we see on the amendment here, Mr. Chairman, are further provisions that really try and lay that out and recognize that you have to have the balance, though, where if we aren't allowing for that non-compete negotiation, we're making it very clear that damages and awards can be put in place of that in that contract negotiation. So it's trying to ensure that you can have that good faith contract negotiation where you recognize that there are costs associated with the recruitment, but at the same time, the non-compete ends up leading to diminished competition in the marketplace. So on for the amendment, so we can make sure that we actually get this ability to clarify that you can have the awards and damages in place, but at the same time, protect the spirit of House Bill 163.
Senator Assembly Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a few questions, and I also then would like to divide this amendment. But first of all, I'd like the good Senator from Bates Creek, if he could answer exactly. I'm just the parts page on the amendment 18 down. It's very confusing. I think it'd be hard for a court to figure out how to compile these damages. I'd also like him to expound on how it solves the Stark problems. I haven't heard that that's the case. So I'm just questioning that. And then, should I do my division now?
Ask that it be divided.
May I have it divided?
Ask away.
May I have the amendment? Can I have the amendment divided? And I'd like to divide it on page 1 through 7 to be the first amendment. I think that's fairly straightforward. The next division would be, second division would be 8 through 16. And the last third division would be 18 through on page 2, after line 2. I think that maybe page 3 goes with it. So all of page 3, I think, is the third division, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so the amendment has been asked to be divided, division 1 being lines 1 through 7 on page 1, division 2 being lines 8 through 17 on page 1, and division 3 being line 18 on page 1 all the way to the end of the amendment on page 2.
Correct.
Chair believes that is divisible and certainly would entertain any objections to the divisibility of the amendment. So we're on division 1. Question on Division 1 being called. All those in favor of Division 1 of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 163, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, Division 1 passes. We're on Division 2. Any discussion on Division 2? Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Division 2 of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to the House Bill 163, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
That division fails. Okay, all in favor of Division 2 to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, House Bill 163, please stand. Okay, we have 8 in favor. All those opposed, please stand. Nineteen against. Division 2 fails. So we're on to Division 3. Any discussion on Division 3 of the Standing Committee Amendment? Oh, Senator Wasberger.
Well, on and in favor of Division 3, Mr. Chairman, and essentially, and I think that people have the right to continue their care with their doctor. When a doctor should happen to leave a practice or the hospital should be compensated for that. And so this is simply just stating what the court will use if that doctor should leave. In my opinion, we need to do all that we can to keep doctors in our community, and it also involves WAMI students. And we should never have a situation where a non-compete clause forces a WAMI student to leave our state.
Senator Assembly Dalton.
On the amendment, please. On the division.
Okay, Senator Rochford, go.
Thank you. I'm on the amendment, I think. Talking about patient care, essentially, if a doctor should happen to leave a hospital or a practice, that practice should be compensated. That hospital should be compensated. They should be compensated for the money that he's lost, whether it's an average salary or liquidated money. It should be a part of the recruitment for it. So the expenses that the hospital used to recruit that doctor, all of those things should be a part of that settlement. And I will bring up the point that the Wyoming legislature has never spoken on this. And in fact, it was in last year in a district court in Wyoming, a judge of ours said, at this time, the Wyoming legislature has not made such a determination. What this does is simply give the courts direction on if a doctor should leave a practice or hospital. And so I think it continues to allow doctors to stay in our state, in our local communities. It allows a doctor to continue care with their local patients so the patients don't have to drive a long way away. And so I'm heavily in favor of the amendment.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Speaking against this division, Mr. Chairman, this is going to have a chilling effect on recruiting doctors. This portion of the amendment and the bill itself will have a chilling effect. It's difficult. I've served on hospital boards. Others of you have. This is a barrier to exiting a profession is a barrier to entering a profession. We are desperate enough to try to recruit physicians to come and serve in Wyoming. Let these things be worked out by contract. Don't impose this kind of requirement, which will just discourage physicians who can go anywhere in America, and the free market really does work, even in rural Wyoming, from coming here and serving our people. This will create a shortage of doctors.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My view is just the opposite of my good friend from Lander. The idea that having the ability to force a non-compete contract on somebody because everybody does it and they have no choice, so when they come in, they'll see that they have no choice but to accept a non-compete contract, which they don't want, somehow that would be encouraging, I don't understand. It's my understanding that this is something which is generally seen as a negative for the contract. The non-compete is not in the interest of the incoming recruited doctor. It's actually quite the opposite. It's something they loathe. But what they're told is, you can take it or leave it. Don't come to the state. And of course, since all of the hospitals use the non-compete agreement, that's true. So the idea that we're better off recruiting when we can allow a monopolistic entity to impose their will on the recruited individuals and take advantage of the fact that they actually want to live in Wyoming just doesn't make sense to me. That doesn't bear out. So I do understand that I don't have the economics degree, but I understand that compulsive negotiations where you have no choice but to accept a contract you don't like is not generally seen as an incentivized practice for recruiting.
Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just really a point of order on the division, which is Division 3 here, which requires the court to consider a number of factors in determining damages in a breach of contract action and limits it to liquidated damages for how a court is to consider that, which flies against the face of fundamental contract concepts, as well as other factors to consider, which I'm struggling to understand how that has absolutely anything to do with the Stark Act. So for that, I'd ask for you to oppose Division 3.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I don't have an economics degree nor a law degree, so therefore I'm sure everybody wants to know my opinion. I've got a problem with the – I thought it was with the bill, and I was going to wait, but it's the same problem I have with this part of the amendment. And it's more conceptual, obviously, not knowing the legal niceties of it, but it seems like we're setting up one standard of law for physicians versus anybody else. You look at this amendment and you look at the bill and you substitute CPA or IT specialist or plumber and put that in there, and the question arises, why are we sticking our nose? Why are we sticking the government's nose in the middle of a business relationship between two entities? And I don't quite understand why it's different with a doctor in a hospital versus any other specialist or any other employee with any other business. And as far as and I'm not buying the argument about the monopolistic aspects of the health care of a community, because at least where I am, there's free clinics all over, well, not free clinics, but there's walk-in clinics all over the place. Doctors probably have more options these days than they had 20 years ago. So I've got problems with both this portion of the amendment and the bill.
Okay, any further discussion on Division 3? Seeing none, all those in favor of Division 3 as Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 163, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
That division fails. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on House Bill 163, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, let me respond to a few of the things here. Mr. Chairman, there probably are problems with some of the other occupations and non-compete clauses generally, because I'm told that they are generally both very common and very difficult to enforce, and cause a good deal of difficulty in the marketplace. The physicians are a special case. We are desperately short in this state of physicians, particularly the kind of physicians, the primary care physicians, that our WAMI program produces. And the number of potential places, Mr. Chairman, that a young physician can work without totally going out into private practice, and that's expensive enough to set up. So a number of them can't do that, and therefore, especially in their first years when they're burdened by student debt, by other kinds of obligations, and the business, whole business of medicine, as opposed to the practice of medicine. The business of amendment, where you have to run an office and all, is a little daunting to somebody fresh out of medical training. Mr. Chairman, we have a number of problems in retaining the physicians that we recruit. The testimony we had was that there were a number of cases where young physicians we'd recruited, particularly from our WAMI program, had left the state, Mr. Chairman, because of these non-compete clauses, because they could not have get out of what they felt was an impossible situation. And these situations arise. I know of a man, Mr. Chairman, who came to the state, was recruited to practice with a set of physicians, and found that his senior partners were practicing medicine in a way that he could not condone, that was grossly out of date, was not up to date. And, Mr. Chairman, and that's what he did was going to practice on his own in partnership with another physician, started a practice that continues, a clinic that continues to this day in Casper. That was happened in 1948. Mr. Chairman, the man was my dad. He would not have been able to continue in Wyoming if he'd had a non-compete clause, but they didn't have such things in those days. The story I heard that touched this bill off, which is not affected by this bill, with the specific language that's in it as it comes to us, is very similar. The physician in question testified before us. In her case, there were two. She didn't approve of the way they were doing things. She couldn't get them to modernize. And it turned out there was a long history in that practice. They'd recruit a young doctor, get her at a rate that contributed considerable to the profits they were making from the practice, and then eventually the doctor said, this is just impossible, and get out, go elsewhere, and the elsewhere was typically outside Wyoming. That's happening to our WAMI doctors, and they come out of medical school, out of their residency trainings, trained in the most modern forms of practice, and then they find that they can't practice that way. And professionally, that gets to be just impossible. And they depart. And they depart in part because so many of our communities are monopoly positions. And if they aren't allowed to go elsewhere successfully, they just leave. That's the evil this bill is seeking to address. Now, I know that some of the employers of those physicians have been lobbying very heavily. That happens to us down here. Mr. Chairman, that happens to us a fair amount. The people we hear from in the committee, in the lobby, in the halls, are representing people who can afford to hire a lobbyist. The young doctors can't afford to do that. They're at a stage of life where they're not organized. Their option is to leave. Mr. Chairman, I know there's some question about this bill. This is a budget session. It came to us fast. It went fast. I would have loved to have had a longer meeting to explore all the nuances, maybe even two of them. Don't get that luxury in a budget session. Mr. Chairman, what I'm going to ask the Senate to do is remember that we're all elected not to weigh the evidence that we hear from the lobby and in the formal committee sessions and vote on the basis of that. But in this process, we are the ones elected to represent all the people. I ask you to remember that. I ask you to remember some people we're not hearing from much through this process because they're not organized. They aren't in a position where they can hire people to come talk to us. I would suggest that we pass this bill. There's a number of things we can do. We need to look at it again and the nuances, make sure we get some of them right. In the interim, where we have more time, but in the meantime, we need the protection so that we are not driving our young physicians out of the state. Mr. Chairman, I urge an aye vote in the bill.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've had the experience of being on both sides of non-competes, both in this state and two other states. And they went along very fine. We negotiated, we made our stance, we signed it, and no one was harmed in the execution of those contracts, nor any animals. Now, I realize that slightly different veterinary medicine as opposed to human medicine, but I find it anathema to be involved in setting rules for the free market, because I think an ounce of prevention in developing a contract is worth a pound of cure having to go to the courts. If it's well thought out and agreed upon, I see no reason for this, because I find it to be just intrusive into professional business.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I rise, first of all, to let you know that I have not been lobbied extensively. And what I have to say about this bill is what I have to say, not what anybody out there has to say. I represent a district that I've talked to you about before, and it's very possible that I have as many health care workers in my district as anybody in the state. And that includes a couple of world-renowned hospitals, literally. And I just rise to present this to you. We've heard about WAMI students, and I understand that. We invest heavily in those people, and we want them to come home. But what about hospitals who spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, literally, to go out and find neurosurgeons? Don't you think that we should agree with the senator over here who says that's a free market deal? If that hospital has spent all that time to go get a physician of that caliber, don't you think that we owe it to that organization to sit down and perhaps require that they can't leave in a year? That's the problem that I have with this bill, is that it comes all the way down into that free exchange of a contract. The people who drew this bill up, that's the people you hire in a process like that to make sure the contract is good, on and against the bill.
Senator Baldwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll make this quick. I have a non-compete clause in my contract. I signed it when I was younger. I was still an adult. And I'm fully believing that those WAMI students are adults. They're young. But it's a contract I signed in with both eyes wide open. I compare this to my 11-year-old son and I have a little bit of difference in dietary needs. And that is we eat a breakfast food in our house that you pop in a toaster, pop it out, and sometimes put butter on it, sometimes you don't. But you can get them with or without frosting. And you're going to see that my name is on this bill, and I was an I-voting committee, and that was with the amendment. That was the bill, or that was my pastry with frosting. My son won't eat those. My son will only eat them without frosting. I hate the without frosting. Frankly, this bill without the amendment makes it still not a healthy bill, but now it's not edible. I would vote no on this bill.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, if we move this thing along, it would be purely for purposes of getting better explanations, because, and I'm not a lawyer. I'm practiced for 35 years. I'm just familiar with these things in the context of being an employer. But what this does is I think it actually weakens the position of a physician in one of these deals. First of all, on page 2, it says, upon termination of the agreement. Well, a physician walks out the door. By the way, the answer to the hospitals is treat your doctors better. I mean, there are some that are prima donnas, but treat them better. It says, upon termination. Well, the doctor walks out to set up a practice. When they get sued, they don't say it's terminated. They say you breached the agreement, and the agreement is valid, and you owe me damages. Ordinarily, what would have to happen is the hospital would have to show that this agreement is enforceable as a matter of public policy. So they've got to convince a judge in a town like mine where the phlebotomists have to be flown in. We have to lease nurses. We have to rent doctors to staff the hospital. I mean, we have a huge shortage. You've got to convince a doctor that it's a good idea to enforce non-competes. That's the law. It has to be enforceable as a matter of public policy. Then the hospital has to prove to the court that the agreement is reasonable as to scope, that is the definition of what they can't practice in, geography, how far they can't practice, and time. And if they fail any one of those, it's not enforceable. Only then can the hospital get to the question of damages. This says go straight to the question of damages with the hospital out having to make all those elements of proof. So I don't know. I mean, I've got some medical people writing me saying, boy, this really helps me. I say, well, you better ask a different lawyer than the one that told you that, because I'm not sure it does. And just speaking for myself personally, I think this would be a great bill if it stopped where it said they're void. They're void. I've worked in a state where they were void. I could say, you can't steal my trade secrets. You can't take my customer lists. You can't solicit my customers, and I have a right to get back any direct expenses. If I had to run an ad, if I've trained you, if I relocated you, if I loaned you money for a house, I have a right to that. But I cannot shut you down. And we did fine. As short as these medical people are in these communities, if we keep this alive, I'd like to see amended to just say these things are void, except for very narrow circumstances. You know, my mom and dad came back to Casper from being down south when my mom was alive. Their doctor had retired. They had to go to the public health clinic to see a doctor. The newer physicians weren't accepting any new patients. So they had to get on the plane and go back down to Arizona so they could see, not anything wrong with the doctors in the public health clinic, but a real doctor. And I don't know. I don't know whether it helps or hurts, but my inclination is it hurts. I think it's a Pop-Tart without icing.
Any further discussion has already been discussed, Senator Nethercott?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously on and against the bill, as previously stated. The good senator from Sheridan is spot on as to what the current state of the law is regarding covenant not to compete. They're generally disfavored, and when a court analyzes them, it's with close scrutiny. So I think that's important for the body to understand. I think what may be really going on here is that some of these young doctors who enter into these contracts with both eyes open are seeing very clearly the very, very lucrative signing bonuses that they're receiving, which obviously no doubt they're going to have to pay back if they terminate the contract. So within an hour from this beautiful city, there's a current opening at a local hospital for an internal medicine. $250,000 base salary guarantee, $60,000 sign-on relocation incentive, $100,000 loan repayment, $75,000 retention bonus, 401k matching, 457b deferred compensation plan, generous retention bonus, plus excellent health benefits, and they get a production incentive for seeing more patients. Wow. I wonder if they can afford a lawyer to review that covenant not to compete. I think that that's really what's going on here, is when they look at what those contracts have to say and the amount of money that they may have to pay back for receiving those significant resources on that sign-on bonus, and then they terminate that contract within a year or two within their service, that might be actually more of the concern of what's happening here. Speaking on to another major concern of this particular bill, on page 2, lines 16 through 20, which seems to be a good idea, but I have grave, grave concern, which says, all covenants not to compete shall provide that the physician will not be prohibited from providing continuing care and treatment to any patient during the course of an acute illness, even after the contract or employment has been terminated. Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that if a physician has been terminated from a hospital, it's for pretty significant concerns, maybe relating to the quality of their health care and concerns associated with that. So from a patient protective concern, I think that's important. I believe recently a bad doctor from Casper actually was terminated from one healthcare provider only to continue providing services at another. And I think the reason why that termination occurred was as a result of being a bad doctor. And so I would be gravely concerned about a doctor who just got terminated from a facility being able to continue to provide care to that particular patient who is a patient of that facility, no less. On and against the bill.
Any further discussion? Senator Raffes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Addressing a couple of those concerns and then just kind of looking at this overall, the language we just looked at is very specific to a termination of the covenant not to compete. It's not a termination necessarily of the job. So it's not firing for cause and then, oh, but you get to keep your patients. It's termination of the covenant not to compete, which is carried over from page 1. So I don't think the concerns that we'll have rogue doctors practicing on patients as a result of this is probably going to bear out. But looking at the concept of being able to indenture these individuals to whatever the facility is that sponsored them into one of our communities sounds like a great way to keep individuals. I know that's what we want. We want to be able to keep them there because we're going to hold them with these non-competes. The trouble is that's not really what happens in bad situations. When we have a bad situation, which my community has been experiencing a bad situation in a couple of instances, when you have a bad situation, it doesn't keep them there. It precludes them from practicing there. You can't keep them there. The non-compete is a local non-compete or within a certain region. So when they have a bad circumstance, they don't just say, all right, well, I just have to buck up and stay. They say, well, there's a lot of jobs down along that front range. Or I've got some friends on the West Coast. My community's lost 8 very good doctors to the region, not to somewhere else in my community. They were recruited. We funded with some state funds those individuals. So we paid the money to get them to my community. And then they left. We can't hold them there. No contract's going to do that. They just can't continue to be a doctor or a healthcare provider in our community. So I understand the objective that we're trying to accomplish, which is to make sure that our doctors and healthcare providers stay when they're recruited. But I don't see that happening. I haven't seen evidence of that. In fact, my concern in this instance is certainly quite the opposite, that these healthcare providers are actually driven out of state due to the non-compete clauses, and they find those great jobs. And in fact, when they're young, they might not have the resources to relocate and hire that lawyer. But after they decide they want to get out of their non-compete clause, they've made enough money to pay their own move, to hire a headhunter, and to probably go somewhere else where they don't have to have that non-compete clause potentially because the market is bigger, and they can say no to one healthcare facility in town, go across the same town to another one, and say, if you give me no non-compete clause, I'll come to your hospital. Because they actually have a free market available where the market is not captive. So, Mr. Chairman, I understand the concerns that are expressed here. And particularly without the full amendment, I think it's pretty clear that this legislation does need some work. I like the ideas of the good senator from Sheridan where maybe we come up with a simpler version that just says for these instances, you can't compete, but you can recuperate certain costs. Let's look to that possibility as this moves forward, Mr. Chairman. But the heart of the issue, I think everybody here agrees on. We want the best possible doctors. We want them to be able to practice in the state of Wyoming. We want them to be able to stay where they live and work with their family. And if we need to do better on this piece of legislation, let's do so. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wasberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm watching these bills at the end of Committee of the Whole die, but so I will speak briefly. I would like to talk about the WAMI students' situation when they are done with their training. They have signed a contract with the state of Wyoming for the amount of money that we have spent with them, and it is $358,000 per kid, per student. So they have to come back to the state of Wyoming for 3 years or they have to pay back their loan. So we're losing some of those doctors. And when we say that we're entering into an area where we shouldn't be, the courts are asking us to enter in. And then when we say non-compete clauses, to me, a doctor, if they leave a practice or the hospital to start their own clinic, that is competition. And that's the reason why there's non-compete clauses, is the hospital doesn't want them to. But lastly, when we talk about the salaries of doctors, a good orthopedic surgeon in Campbell County Health is paid $1.2 million. Why? Because they bring in that much business. They're worth that much money. And so literally, our WAMI students can make that kind of money if they're in orthopedic surgery. Some of them aren't. Most of them aren't. But on and in favor of the bill, and we need to move on.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I agree. We need to move on. This is an important bill, and I hope it's if I'm like the good doctor to my right. It was a better bill with the amendments. I mean, we're trying to reach a balance, and it's out of balance right now. If I'm one of these new students coming into Wyoming trying to pay off my $350,000 debt by requirement, and I refuse to sign that agreement, I can go somewhere else. So there's a problem with that. The no-compete is a problem that's giving all the authority and balance to those organizations, those employers. The other thing we need to consider, folks, is the difference that Wyoming is. We like to pride ourselves in the fact that we're different. In this case, we certainly are. What drives this difference is the market, our numbers. If we lived on the Front Range down there to the south of us, it would be no problem. No compete. Dime a dozen, these physicians, these orthopedic surgeons, these OBGYNs. And so 75 miles, 100 miles, no problem. But throughout this whole discussion, we've never talked about, I think, the most important thing, and that is the patients, the people who we represent. It was brought out in testimony in our committee that in this one particular community, the spouse of this person has had three different female doctors in the last 5 years. Our citizens have to go doctor shopping because of doctors being forced out because of non-compete clauses. Have to go somewhere else. Or, at the very least, they have to drive another 75 miles to go see that same physician. In our area, they're doing that. Our patients are driving 90-some-odd miles to go see their same physician because person A can't get along with person B. And I don't know all the reasons why, but right now it's out of balance, and the balance is in favor of these employers who know that, and they use it. And who suffers? Not the facility, not the doctor, it's the patients, who we represent as well.
Senator Agar.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't going to get up and speak on this, but I'll make it really quick. Obviously, this is a very large and emotionally driven discussion, Mr. Chairman. It has come at us rather fast. I don't know if it's appropriate or not, but I would like to urge the chairman from Bates Creek to pick this up as an interim topic and vet it very well. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 163, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
That has failed. In accordance with our rules, we'll proceed to a standing vote. All those in favor, please rise. Five in favor. All those opposed, please stand. Stand up. 24. Okay. 24 against. Pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5, having failed the same division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Agar?
No.
Agar, no. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard? No. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard? No. Burns?
No.
No. Case? No. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
Nope.
No. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer? Excused? Meyer excused? Excused? Moniz? Aye. Nethercott?
No.
Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Kleder?
No.
No. Wasterberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. House Bill 163. 5 aye, 24 no. One excused.
House Bill 163, having failed the roll call vote, pursuant to say Rule 6-5A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 140.
House Bill 140, School Finance Amendments 4, sponsored by Representative Northrup, an act relating to school finance.
There are standing committee amendments. Would you please read them in at this time?
House Bill 140, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, page 1, line 2.
Senator Coe.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would move to when committee the whole rise and report it. Do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 140. You read in the standing committee amendment, I think, and I would move that at this time. Members of the Senate, I'll try to get through this as quickly as I can. This is somewhat of a complex issue. I can tell you when House Bill 140 came over to the Senate Education Committee, what they had done in the House was basically tried to meld House Bill 140 with House Bill 30, which deals with efficiencies. That was a joint education bill. So we immediately had a concern in the Senate Education Committee that this bill was loaded up with stuff that was not germane to the bill. Article 3, Section 20 mandates that no bill shall be so altered or amended on its passage through either house as to change its original purpose. Clearly, if you look at this bill, you can see it does a number of different things. So it appears the proposed substitute bill to House Bill 140 alters it beyond its original purpose. The amendment, among other things, would provide for significant additional revenue diversions for public education, including altering how funds flow to the Strategic Investment and Projects Account, SIPA. Not quite sure what that has to do with school finance, and what those funds may be used for, and how federal mineral royalties, severance taxes, online sales tax, and corporation license taxes are distributed. That's all included in the bill as it came to the Senate. So that's the situation we found ourselves in, members of the Senate. And what we did in the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'm going to ask that you pull out your Standing Committee Amendment, and the first thing you're going to see in the Standing Committee Amendment, if you go to page 1, the title page, we delete lines 3 through 15. We delete all that. If you go to the second page, we delete lines 6 through 9. That's all the first part of the Standing Committee Amendment. So if you'd work off your Standing Committee Amendment, the Standing Committee Amendment removes all appropriations and revenue changes that were amended into the bill after introduction. The Standing Committee Amendment restores House Bill 140 in gross to a position of the Joint Education Interim Committee's recommendation on K-12 cost efficiencies. That'd be House Bill 30. It requires school districts to participate in Department of Workforce Services programs to reduce workers' compensation premium discounts and limits the extra hazardous definition of aides and certified staff. It modifies the funding model's calculation of ADM to provide funding based upon the greater of the three-year average or the prior year, with the decision made at the district level, not the school level. It modifies the groundskeepers formula to provide district-level groundskeepers at a rate equal to 10% of the school-level groundskeepers, no longer based upon total district site acreage. This comes to us with a situation here in Laramie 1 where they actually have a farm, you know, 280 acres. It repeals student assessment funding, Rationale is that these assessments are provided through the statewide assessment contract. And lastly, the bill keeps the phase-in of the reductions caused by changes to ADM and groundskeepers formula, Section 6, and keeps in the hold harmless provision for small school districts to allow only a 2.5% reduction in 1 year. And there's four of those districts. They would be Washakie 2, Tensleep, Park 16, Metici, Fremont 2, I believe it is, Dubois, and Sherry 3 or Vata Clara. Those are the four districts that 2.5% affects. So going through the amendment. So you'll see on page 1 of the amendment, lines 1 through 22 are changed to the title of the bill. They go out of there. Amendment page 1, lines 24 through 31 on the Standing Committee Amendment are changes to Section 1, amending the sections of law to be amended by this act. Moving further, we're still on page 1, lines 33 through 37, and it does the following. Deletes changes made to the Strategic Investment and Projects account on pages 3, 4, and 7 through 10 to guarantee any funding for major maintenance and capital construction. We take that out. It deletes changes made to the distribution of state royalties on page 4 and 5 to provide the full one-third amount to the school capital construction account. That's where they divert that to school capital construction. Deletes changes made to the distribution of FMRs to the school foundation program account on page 6. And deletes changes made to increase the balance of the common school permanent land funds spending policy reserve account to 300% of the spending policy on pages 8 and 9. Goes on and deletes changes made to distribute 50% of corporate and LLC filing fees
not quite sure where that comes from, to the school foundation program account on pages 11 through 13 of the bill. Moving on further on the amendment, on the standing committee amendment, page 1, lines 39 through 41, does the following. Deletes changes made to the definition of ADM to lower the threshold of full-time students from 80% to 75% on pages 14 and 15. That's attendance. Deletes the change to allow any funds in excess of $600 million in the school foundation program account to transfer to the school foundation program reserve account. That was a significant change. It, as you might know, we've always, on July 1st, had a balance of $100 million in there. This raises that threshold, so it would be quite a while before we'd ever hit that. And deletes the change to allow the interest earned in the school foundation program reserve account to be credited to the school foundation program reserve account and not the general fund. Another diversion. Moving on. Amendments, page 1, line 43, and page 2, line 1, on the standing committee amendment, does the following. Deletes the changes made to the transportation funding. The House removed the amendment that limited bus purchases for only emergency purposes and amended bus replacement cycles to be within 10% of national standards. The House removed the freeze on transportation operations funding at the average of fiscal year 2014, fiscal year 2015, and fiscal year 2016 expenditures. And the House allowed bus fleet size to be commensurate with district ADM size. Moving on to the Standing Committee Amendment, page 2, lines 3 through 39. This is where we insert 2113-320J and M. This allows school districts to purchase buses if they are paid for in full or partially paid for by federal funds from the Diesel Emissions Reduction Act. This was also part of the Joint Education Interim Committee's recommendation. Still on the Standing Committee Amendment, page 2, lines 41 through 43. Deletes the changes made to special education funding. We're going to bring back a committee the whole minute and talk about that more later. Cap special education funding to expenditures made in 2017 and 18, school year. And amended the Medicaid plan to include school-based medical services and school-based Medicaid-eligible services. Still on the Standing Committee Amendment, page 2, line 45, and page 3, lines 1 through 20. Inserts paragraphs 6, XVI 16 and subsection F to align with the Joint Education Interim Committee's recommendation to limit the extra hazardous definition of special education aides and certified staff. On page 3, lines 22 through 26, it does the following. Deletes changes made to the severance tax distribution formula. Deletes changes made to the sales and use tax distribution formula. And deletes changes made to the Medicaid plan to include school-based medical and Medicaid services. Page 3, lines 28 through 35, this is where we deal with the groundskeeper's formula to ensure school sites are calculated based upon current law. Page 3, lines 7 through 10, deletes the requirement for the Department of Health and Education to promulgate rules on changes made in response to the Medicaid plan for school-based services. The amendment on page 3, line 39 through page 4, line 7, replicate Section 7 of the bill in a new location. Page 4, line 9, deletes the $10 million appropriation, $5 million from the School Foundation Program, and $5 million from federal funds for special education Medicaid programs. Page 4, line 9 is a conforming change to renumber bill sections. We're getting there now. Page 4, lines 13 through 15 does the following. Deletes Section 7, which is replicated previously in the amendment on page 3, line 39, to page 4, line 7. Deletes transfer from the School Foundation Program Reserve Account to the Common School Permanent Land Fund Spending Policy Reserve Account. That's contained in the budget bill. Deletes transfer from the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund Spending Policy Reserve Account to the School Capital Construction Account. deletes the requirement for the CREG to meet. I'm not sure where this comes from, but that was in the bill. Census Revenue Estimating Group, Section 9. Deletes Section 10, which is the superseding clause. Deletes Section 11, which was the conforming repealed statutes for the transportation amendments. And deletes the $2 million appropriation to the Department of Education for special education out-of-district placements above the cap limit. And finally, Amendment 4, Lines 17 through 25 is conforming language. Now, I will say that I plan on bringing a committee the whole amendment that would put the cap back on special education on 2017-18 levels, and also bring an amendment that will include the $2 million on the side that they have, that they need in special education to keep it whole. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I draw your attention to the handout. Everybody can pick out their favorite district. And you'll see that in House Bill 140, we have total estimated impact is a reduction of $7,604,000. Now, I can tell you with this bill, next year that'll be closer to $20 million. That difference is made up by the two-thirds of difference of ADM and groundskeepers. They're held whole up to two-thirds the first year. That goes down to a third the second year. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for questions. It's a complex issue. It's something that we worked really hard on. It was not easy stuff we were doing. But I think it's the right way to proceed as we look at the what's going on in school finance. So I'd stand for questions.
Discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, at the end of the day, though, with the amendment in the bill, isn't this indeed just a reduction in the increase when we take in all factors concerning education?
Senator Kinski.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, as a follow-up to my colleague, I would ask the sponsor, bringer of the amendment, if he might ask staff to give us kind of gross number what this looks like after all the automatic escalators are built in, because the two numbers my colleague, the great senator from the Northwest, cited, I think are a gross reduction, but it doesn't say what the net is after you factor in all the automatic escalators built into the model, which would make the net effect of this substantially less, and perhaps staff can provide that information to us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, escalators are somewhat uncontrolled, and I can tell you that two of them are special education and health insurance, and you know, those kick in. And remember that with the health insurance component, we fund in the model of what's going on in the state plan. You notice that we took out the provision to cap special education. I'm going to bring an amendment to put that cap back in. We only know that with special education, that the escalator part of that, and special education is the 800-pound gorilla in this whole situation. That runs between 3 and 5% increase every year, automatic escalator. So that's something that's relevant. Now, if we adopt the committee of the whole amendment, we come back next January, we can do stuff in the interim, see how it's working out with special education. But it is the 800-pound gorilla as we look at what's going on. Special education is a huge, huge number. We have, in my community, we had testimony in the interim, we've got people moving to Wyoming because of how we reimburse and take care of special education. So this is something we need to get our arms around, but this is a huge part of what we're talking about.
Senator Wasberger.
Much. The escalators really are special programs, transportation, also the salary schedule within the model itself, and then finally the biggest one is health insurance.
Any further discussion? Senator Von Flager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious to the sponsor of the bill. When I look at, like, say, Campbell 1, of course, the one I do know, and it has an 80 model average daily membership change. Is that what the district will lose in actual cash because of the
just on the ADM aspect, or is that inclusive of everything? I'm not really sure what that number means.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that amendment aspect, the model average daily membership, there's a change to the way the calculation for average daily membership takes place in the amendment relative to the original bill. So this is based on that calculation of the year-over-year minimum as opposed to incorporating a rolling average. And then there is also an aspect, I was looking to see if it's elsewhere in here, an aspect of how ADM is calculated, and that is a change that is incorporated there also. So that's the portional ADM, as well as whether you're looking at a district-wide ADM or a per-school basis ADM. So it's all based on how it's calculated. It's not assuming any change to ADM. So three different calculation concepts that were looked at by Joint Education in the interim. And incidentally, just Mr. Chairman, while I'm here, on and for the amendment, I agree with the fact that there are substantial constitutional problems. This puts it back to being a constitutional piece of legislation, whether you like the bill or not.
Any further discussion? Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 140. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. That amendment passes. There is a second Standing Committee Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read that in?
House Bill 140, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to engrossed copy, page 2, lines 6 and 7.
That was from Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Senator Cope.
Mr. Chairman, I was kind of waiting for the Chairman of Appropriations to stand up and say something really nice. He was going to withdraw his amendment.
Senator Burns.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am just so overwhelmed by the beauty of that First Amendment that I'd like to withdraw this one.
All right, that amendment has been withdrawn. We are back on the bill. I believe we have a Committee of the Whole amendment.
House Bill 140, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 3, lines 1 through 5.
Senator Cope.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to withdraw that at this time and bring it tomorrow on second reading.
Okay. Hey, barring any objection, that amendment is withdrawn. Any discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 140, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. House Bill 140 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 194.
House Bill 194, State-Funded Capital Construction, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to state-funded facilities, was referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole reports, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 194. Rather than a standing committee amendment, there is a substitute bill, and I would like to quickly explain the substitute bill. I'd like to have it read in, please.
Okay. House Bill 194, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, that substitute.
Mr. Chairman, the substitute bill is basically our Senate File 121 as it went out of the Senate. As we know, when things get down the other end, some interesting things happen. So what they did was they did their own CapCon bill, sent it up here. So what your Appropriations Committee did was take it back to 121. So what is removed So what is removed from 194 are the task forces for both the UW dorms and the moratorium, as well as the task force for the Casper office building. The Casper office building is also removed. The UW $25 million athletic challenge grant is removed, and we were supposed to have removed the $24.5 million for the science initiative. There was a misunderstanding in the drafting of the substitute bill, so I've got a committee of the whole amendment that addresses that. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, I would move substitute bill number one before going through it.
Okay, that substitute amendment has been moved. Any discussion? Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 194, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. That amendment passes. We're back on the bill. Senator Burns, do you have a Standing Committee, or excuse me, a Committee of the Whole Amendment?
It's a Committee of the Whole Amendment, I believe, Mr. Chairman, and I'll get to that. Oh, I'll go ahead and read it in, please.
House Bill 194, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to engrossed copy to substitute Bill number 1, page 28, line 3.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know why I thanked you. It was the reading clerk that did all the work. But anyway, just running through this bill as fast as we can, given the hour. If you start, we'll start on page 2. This is where we have the loan from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. We authorized the SLIB board to make loans to cities and counties of a total of $400 million. $200 million shall be for street, road and street projects, and the other is for infrastructure projects. That's actually pretty much a standard CAPCON bill. We've got explanations of the loan and requirements of the loan going on until we get to page 8, where we get to the student dormitories. This is a $60 million loan from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund to community college districts for dormitories, for them to be able to rent to borrow money to build dormitories. The original bill had restrictions.
Senator Murray, do you have a point of order?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I got a question on that loan program, and I want to draw everybody's attention to just briefly.
So, Senator Murray, do you have a point of order to interrupt the current speaker?
Well, I thought we were just a minute. My question is, can we ask questions on this bill as we're going through on the amendment, or you want to wait till the end?
Mr. Chairman, I'd rather wait till the end. That way I can get through it, and hopefully you'll forget the question. So, Mr. Chairman, on page 8, we have, this is basically a new program. It's $60 million to be lent to the community colleges. The original language in this restricted it to just one community college. This opens it up to any of them. And then there are the various restrictions and requirements for those loans, which you can read. Interestingly, on page 10, line 9, it gives the interest rate. It shall be 0.1% multiplied by each year of the loan, maximum of 25 years. So it's a maximum interest rate of 2.5% on the loan. We get to page 15. This is the Ranch A. They're getting $100,000 for this, and it's a legal description of Ranch A. Page 16, this is where we get into these federal buildings that are being built by the military. This is all federal funds that are building these. However, once they're completed, the state is required to maintain these buildings. One of the things we've found in testimony is that the new buildings they're building are quite a bit larger, not only in square footage, but in volume. And so we're finding that the utility bills for these buildings are 3 and 4 times what the buildings they're replacing are. So what this does is it puts a restriction in there that we have a say on the final design and have to be submitted to us, especially for energy efficiency and best practice techniques, before we approve and agree to authorizing the spending of the money for the construction of these buildings. The next page is deals with revenue bonds. This authorizes right now the university is authorized to issue revenue bonds. This opens up revenue bonds to community college districts. And so going through the bill, you just see community college district added onto this, and we also lower the interest rate to 1 5/10%. So as we move on, we get to the capital construction projects themselves, starting on page 24, and you can read through those and the footnotes. One thing you'll notice on page 27, you've got the UW Family Medicine 875 project. That $875,000 for that project. That's where we also remove the $25 million challenge grant from the university. Starting on the bottom page 27 is the science initiative. The language here authorizes 20 million, and on the table it authorizes 24 million. This was an oversight. This is not what the committee agreed to. So I'm bringing committee of the whole amendment on that, and I'd be glad to explain it more later. On page 29 and 30, you see another table there. This is the table from the 2016 CapCon bill, and the reason that's in this bill is because one thing we did was, if you go down on line 20 of page 30, we had previously appropriated $13.5 million to the medium security prison in Torrington to fill in the shelled-out area they have. Because of circumstances, we decided, if you see the line below that, to remove $7.75 million out of that and for repairs, needed repairs at the penitentiary in Rollins because of problems we're all aware of. You have footnotes from 2016. Then we get to page 33, and these are the projects from SIPA 18, from 2018 SIPA, and there's basically two lines there. One is the University Science Initiative, which my amendment will take that out, so that money will remain in SIPA. The other is for the State Facilities Construction Account, $37 million. This is for the overruns for the State Hospital and the Wyoming Life Resource Center. They are $37 million over budget, so it's going to be $187 million rather than $150 million. Page 36, we get to the inter-fund loans, you can see where that money is the contract obligations. We've changed it from A&I to the State Construction Department. Page 37... I'm sorry. Page 37 is $400,000 that we put in for CASPER when we were originally appropriating the money for the CASPER office project. There are also related properties there on Ash Street, and there's an area called Railway something, Rail Yard Rentals. And this is all state property. This is to clean up a lot of that property, make it not look so trashy, and also to install a parking lot for the benefit of the city of Casper until we can get start on that new building. And then on the next number of pages, you see these are all legal descriptions of that area in Casper. When we get to page 45, this is the Coal Road in Kemmerer, in Lincoln County, which we're all familiar with. On page 47, you see the Veteran Skilled Nursing Care Loan Authorization. This is where we're authorizing legislative stabilization reserve account up to 35% of the actual cost of building the structure. The federal government will provide 65% of that. And, Mr. Chairman, I believe that's the end of the description of the bill. I'd be glad to entertain any questions.
Any questions on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1? Senator Meyer.
No. I look at page 4, Mr. Chairman, and I went in there as far as how much interest rate's going to be paid to the PMTF, and it's 0.1%.
0.1%. That is free money. We're giving away $400 million of free money in that loan program. You know, folks, that's probably $20, $30 million less that's going to be coming in to the revenue stream. Now, sure, the good senator from the Bighorn County said we're going to be able to leverage that, Kurt, with a lot of federal money, and that's no doubt that. But, folks, I think that we need to take a look at free money when we're actually raiding the treasurer for free money. Just think about it a little bit.
Senator Burns.
First of all, was the good senator referring to me when he said the senator from Bighorn County? Because one of us is insulted.
Senator Meyer. Absolutely not. It's a good senator from up around Cali in that area there. I mean, it's of course, I wouldn't insult the other senator from the other side of Bighorn County. Absolutely not.
Mr. Chairman, on that topic, that the interest rate is 0.1% multiplied by each year of the length of the loan, maximum 25 years. So if it's a 25-year loan, the interest rate will be 2.5%. This is also an incentive for them to pay this loan back, because the sooner they pay it back, the lower their interest rate.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. This may be for the bringer of the amendment, or it may be for my colleague from Cali. I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to see some specific situations and illustrations of how this would work, because we do have an obligation to make sure the money eventually comes back. So infrastructure projects, if it's a water project right now, they can borrow from the state revolving fund. It's not 0.1 per year, it's 2.5%. So that means people borrow under this instead of taking advantage of the state revolving fund, which was set up for at least water. I think that's water, clean water projects, water purification plants, and sewers. So what will this do to our existing local government loan programs, a lot of which is driven by federal funds and are partially grant? Second is, I see there a pledge of the revenues from the project for which the loan was granted. Is it contemplated that would be the sewer bills on it, or would it be, if it's a road and street project, is there going to be a local improvement district? And if that's the case, why wouldn't they have a street district? You know, that's how we used to pay for streets in the old days. We would have a street improvement district. And so if you've got a street improvement district, ordinarily, you'd go to a bond, which you'd pay 2.5% for, rather than 0.1% per year. So what does this do to the private bond market? And I just want to understand better. A couple walkthroughs of a couple examples would give me a greater comfort level. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Senator Meyer.
I'm just wondering that, is there a prohibition about having a loan every year, so you don't have any 2.5% loans, as you just decide what you're going to need in your infrastructure, and every year you take out a 0.1% loan, the next year you use that for your operating, and then the next year you take out another 0.1% loan. It seems like you can, unless there's a prohibition about how these guys can game this, I think that we need to tighten it up.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, what you could do, because I spent 10 years doing this, is I look at it, I'd go down to the SRF, and I'd take out $20 million for a water treatment plant. They give it to you half as grant, half as loan. They call the grant non-repayment. So you take the grant, you take the other half that's a loan at 2.5%, and you go borrow over here at 0.1% and pay off the 2.5% loan with 1% money from the Permanent Mineral Trust. That's the way. I mean, I would see nothing wrong with doing that if I were running a little sewer plant. Anyway.
Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe we're talking about apples and oranges here. One question was about the dorm loans, and again, that's 1%, 1/10 of 1%. per year for the length of the loan. So if you're making a 20-year loan, it's a 2% loan. As far as the loans from the Permanent Minimum Trust Fund, those are made by, they're negotiated by the State Loan Investment Board, the elected, statewide elected five. And in this, they will adopt the rules and procedures that seem advisable or necessary to administer the program. So, and then we put restrictions and the sideboards, but we do give the flexibility to the SLIB board itself.
Any further discussion? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a brief history of this whole concept is that we already have loan programs from the state. They're not being utilized at all because the interest rate is so high. It's not competitive. So what's the sense of having a loan program if it's not going to be utilized? So that concept was talked about among the creators of this idea. The other thought behind this is, again, if you read this particular part of this bill, these are smaller communities that have no sales tax revenue generation capabilities to put towards streets in particular. I'm talking about one half of this, the $200 million for streets for cities, towns, and counties. And there are two concepts here to consider. This is just the one of them. But the idea is to reserve a portion of that $200 million for the smaller communities before it's used up by the larger communities. If a community has one loan out, they cannot apply for another loan until that loan is paid off. It's specifically for streets and roads because we've tied the hands of our communities that they can only generate money in these type of accounts to pay for water and sewer and other fees like garbage collection. But what do you do for streets? So many times our communities come down to SLIB to apply for some type of a grant or a loan for our SLIB for our streets and roads. Counties do the same thing. But I would guess probably 9 times out of 10 or maybe 10 out of 10, they're denied and they're bumped on the list because health and safety always comes first. So there's no place. This is a hole that we have in our state for funding these type of programs, for these type of projects. Read the bill because there are a lot of qualifiers in there to qualify for even approaching SLIB with these requests. You have to have your infrastructure in place, your water, your sewer, your electrical, all these things in place before you can even apply for this type of a street or road program. So we're trying to set up a process here, and we're trying to fill a hole that exists already where these communities have no capability of generating sales tax revenue. In my particular community, for example, we have one convenience store and the business my family operates, and that's it, the two generators of sales tax. There's no way that that's going to generate enough revenue to put towards a street project. Now, I want you to think about this as well, Mr. Chairman. This money that we're sacrificing out of the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund that we've taken and invested in other areas, not just of the country, but of the world, to generate interest revenue. Great idea, great concept, love it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It worked well this last year. The year before that, zero. The thought is, behind the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, if you look at your statutes, the reason that fund was created was to build Wyoming's infrastructure, period. Now, we've taken that money, and we've put it in other places of the country and other places of the world to build their infrastructure for the sake of bringing some of that revenue back. My question is, what we sacrifice in that interest revenue, could we generate by investing in our own infrastructure, by making our communities better, better places to live, attractive, more people, more taxes? Let's talk about construction projects, hiring Wyoming contractors, rotating those dollars in these communities. And let's talk about the first project that might come down and take out a loan for $3 million for a small town project, and they leverage it with federal dollars. Match it. I've made up my $500,000 that we've made on interest revenue in the first project. I've leveraged federal dollars. Some might have a problem with that, saying, well, more free money. Well, it's money that has not been available to us because we haven't invested in our own infrastructure. It's a great program. Ask you to support the bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't going to get into this debate, but there was one thing said that I really think needs to be corrected. The Permanent General Trust Fund, when you look at it, the language there specifically dedicates the revenue from that to the general fund. And my understanding, Mr. Chairman, going back to when I first voted on this as a citizen, not a member of the legislature in 1974, was that the idea behind the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund was we'd have revenue for our general fund so the state could survive once the minerals were gone. And I think that's where we have to be concerned with low-interest loans out of the general fund, out of the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. That's going to hurt our future revenues we're going to desperately need.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Committee of the Whole number 1 to substitute Bill number 1 of House Bill 194.
Okay, it's been moved. Is there any further discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I touched on this earlier. There was a miscommunication with staff on this bill, what the committee agreed to do, and this has to do with the science initiative at the university. What the committee agreed to do, and it's this way in the budget bill too, was there. It's currently $75,600,000 in the account, and so the what this amendment does, and it should be in the bill, is it tells the university, here's your 75.6, you find the other $24,400,000 to complete the science initiative.
Any discussion on the Committee of the Whole Amendment, Senator Office?
Chairman, on the Committee of the Whole Amendment, I don't think this is how we left it in the budget. I'm pretty confident we had it at 80-20. That was the last amendment that passed. The 75-6 is what's currently appropriated. As of the last count, the 24-4 is what's remaining. I do understand that. I understand where these numbers come from. But, Mr. Chairman, if what we're trying to do here is mirror the budget is at 80-20, so I'd ask for more clarification from perhaps someone who can point me to where in the budget that passed this chamber these numbers are reflected. That's certainly not my recollection.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, the Senate version of the budget is 74-6, 75-6, rather, and 24-4. The current version of the CAPCON bill, 194, provides the $24,400,000 to finish the initiative. If that's what the body wants, then deny this amendment. If indeed the budget bill is 80-20, that's something we can take up on a second reading amendment. But the position of the JAC on this bill was 24-6, 24-4.
Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would ask that the bill or the amendment be divided. Lines 1 through 12 being Division 1. Lines 13 through 23 being Division 2. If you find that divisible, I'll speak on.
Okay, I find that to be divisible, barring any objections. Division 1 is lines 1 through 12, Division 2, 13 through 23. On Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, the substitute bill number 1 for House Bill 194, Senator Office, here on the First Division.
Thank you. On the First Division. Again, if the good chairman can point to me where we have 75-6 and 24-4 in the budget, then we probably do need to mirror it and match it. My recollection is that we're at 80-20, and if the objective is to mirror that, then we need to defeat the first this first division of this amendment. And really, I'm open to seeing that if somebody can point me to where that is. But it makes good sense to mirror that in this particular piece of legislation. But this is one I'm fairly confident on, unless I just missed something, that we're at 80-20 right now.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, I believe my colleague from the Ivory Towers recollection is correct. What I would say is I urge an affirmative vote on the entire amendment as proposed. It's by the Appropriations Committee, And about the 80-20, I'd say that was then, this is now. I mean, we were in the midst of a fit of irrational exuberance when we went to the 80-20, and now we've been slapped by the reality of just how tight our resources are, and we need to bring this money back into the budget in order to make it balanced. So I would urge an affirmative vote on the entire proposed amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on Division 1? Senator Office.
Thank you. All right. Well, if I was correct, which is nice to hear, then I'd urge the body to reject the first division of the amendment. We have been down this road. This body took the position that 80-20 is what we would go with. The understanding that we're trying to mirror is now incorrect, so we're setting up diverse positions between the two bills, which is certainly not useful, particularly since one of those positions is already being negotiated. So I don't know what the benefit is at this point in adopting the first. Adopting the second makes some sense because that actually conforms to what we previously had. So on and against the first division.
Okay, question being called on Division 1 of Standing or Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to substitute bill for House Bill 194. Oh. Okay. Okay. Okay, so all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. That division carries. We're on Division Number 2. Any discussion on Division 2? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Okay, that division carries. We're back on the bill. Okay, question on the bill being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise, Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 194, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
House Bill 194 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 186. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 186, SIPA Guarantee, sponsored by Representative Harshman, an act relating to public funds, was referred to Committee Number 12, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Hastert, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Mr. Vice President?
I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to do so with a favorable consideration of House Bill 186, the SIPA Guarantee. And this is the bill that came over from the House to us. There is a handout on your desk which will work with the amendment number one, which, Mr. Chairman, I would hold. I would not like it read in. We will take it up maybe as amendment number two. We wanted to get this bill read in today, so it would be on the Committee of the Whole. So this bill is as you see it right now, and the diagram that you have on your desk will fit in later. I stand for questions on this, but we needed to get it read in today, and then we'll do the amendment tomorrow.
Senator Burns.
Can I ask which diagram?
The diagram
Senator Bonflater.
Yeah, exactly. The one with the green bucket will be what it turns into.
I guess they're not reading. Senator Von Flatern, are you withdrawing that amendment for
yes,
now?
I am withdrawing the amendment.
Thank you.
Question on the
bill. Okay, seeing no further discussion on House Bill 186. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the committee holds rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 186, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
House Bill 186 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 168. The reading clerk will read in the bill.
House Bill 168, Stand Your Ground 2, sponsored by Representative Salazar, an act relating to crimes and civil liability, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. No, Senator Emmerich. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
You've heard the ring of the bell. What is your pleasure, Senator Hicks?
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill... No, Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 168 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, if I could have that read in at this time.
House Bill 168, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, that substitute number 2.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll pick up your substitute number 2, this should look like an old friend that came out of the Senate last week. What your committee number 5 did was take Senate File 71 as it was amended and passed out of here, and then amended it in to House Bill 168. So this is the amended version that we passed out, and I would ask for your favorable consideration of a yes vote if there's no questions on the bill.
Question. Okay, we're on the Standing Committee Amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 168, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. That amendment carries. We're back on the bill.
Question.
I believe there's a committee of the whole amendment. Do we want to? Senator Bouchard?
Yeah, I move committee of the whole amendment.
Could read
one.
It? Sorry, can we read in that committee of the whole amendment?
Sorry.
House Bill 168, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, to substitute Bill Number 2, page 1, line 6.
Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move committee of the whole.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I may be corrected here, but I think the substitute bill itself has to be voted in.
But we voted on the amendment.
As a substitute bill? Okay, thank you.
Senator Burchard.
Hey, we'll try this one more time. I move committee of the whole amendment number 1 to House Bill 168, and all this is a cleanup amendment to the tagline of the bill. It just actually makes the part on page, and I'm looking for it now. It just, on page 6, the top of the page, it just actually has reference to that. It just puts it in the tagline as well. It's a friendly amendment. I would urge the body to vote aye.
Okay, seeing no discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment, number 1 substitute bill for House Bill 168, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. That amendment carries. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on House Bill 168? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Von Flaher's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 168, please say aye.
I believe it was Chairman Hicks that made that motion.
Excuse me, Senator Hicks, thank you. All those in favor of Senator Hicks' motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 168, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
House Bill 168 has passed committee of the whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 130. The reading clerk will read in the... Senator Dockstetter.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, standing in for our majority floor leader, he's asked that we conclude as of right now, and the cutoff would be close to 5:30. So with that, I move committee of the whole. No. I move the committee of the whole rise and report. There we go.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, please say no.
No.
Chairs in doubt. All those in favor, please stand.
Aye.
Aye. Everybody's good.
All those in favor, please stand.
Yeah. We're
stood.
Rising and reporting. Right. Nobody's playing. It's only 1:30.
Yeah.
What is 1:30?
Stay fair and down.
Oh, hey.
Sit down.
Boy. No, let's do it. Let's stay fair and down.
Stay fair and down.
Let's do it. Let's talk about 1:30.
Yeah.
If we
rise and
report, that bill's dead.
This is committee of the
whole
report.
Okay, so we're voting on whether Senator Dockstetter's motion that the committee of the whole rise and report. All those in favor, please stand.
It's not your.
11-4. All those opposed, please stand. Okay, there's 11 against. The chair votes no.
Point of order, I believe that Senator Anselmi Dalton had not risen until the very end, and I don't believe she was counted. On the aye side.
Nays and nays, please.
No, you can't call it. You can't do that.
Okay.
Who said cut it off?
Okay, for the last time, all those in favor, please stand.
Favor rising report.
Okay, 10 in favor. All those opposed, please stand. Fourteen against. That motion fails. Will the reading clerk please read it in House Bill 130.
House Bill 130, State Fair Endowment, sponsored by Representative Henderson, an act relating to the State Fair, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
You've heard the ringing of the bell. What is your pleasure, Senator Hicks?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 130. Members, we're going to do this fast and quick. It's a good little bill. It's a state fair endowment bill. We're trying to get the state fair to be self-sufficient. What it does is it goes in and it establishes an endowment count. Once that endowment count has reached its full maximum of $100,000, that would be placed in there, and there's a $100,000 max. After that, 75% of all revenues would go back into the endowment count. 25% of those revenues would go to the state fair account to help fund the operations of the state fair. Any donations to the account would be then credited towards the account. Those would be accounted for by the Department of Agriculture and verified with the state treasurer's office. It does bring in page 4 that the board, the new board that we've created, could assess up to 1% of any revenues generated at the state fair that would also go into the endowment revenue account. There is a standing committee amendment, Mr. Chairman, if I could have that read in.
House Bill 130, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, page 1, line 6.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 130. And for an explanation, Mr. Chairman, I will provide that. First thing I want to do is divide the amendment. Division number 1 is line 1 and line 11 through 16. Division 2 is line 1, page 1, line 6. No, excuse me, is line 3 through line 9 is division number 2.
Yeah, I find that to be divisible, division 1 being line 1 and lines 11 through 16, division 2 being lines 3 through 9.
Okay, members, I want you to pay attention here on division 1, we're going to deal with it first. What division 1 does is go...
Senator Von Flader.
I'm curious, was this sent to appropriations?
We don't have the amendment.
We don't have it.
They don't have the amendment either. Yeah, he's making it up too. Was this sent to appropriations?
And on that first question, Senator Hicks, was this sent to appropriations?
Mr. Chairman, the standing committee amendment stripped the appropriations out of the bill. So consequently, it was not re-referred to the appropriations committee because there is no appropriation in the bill as it come out of the committee.
Our bill... our own rules and regulations say everything with an appropriation will be sent to Appropriations Committee Number 2. And that's what I would ask. I didn't realize there was an appropriation.
Okay. Senator, Senator Office.
Thank you. I respectfully disagree with the Vice President. We've done that many times in the past as a way of avoiding the Appropriations Committee, is to strip out any appropriation. I mean, that's not the first time we've seen that in the rodeo.
Or the State Fair.
It's rodeo at the State Fair.
Senator Van Flair.
It says appropriations either way, in or out, go through appropriations. And so it says that in our rules. Whether or not this was sent to appropriations, I don't know that. But if we'll look it up and we'll get back to you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we had a discussion about this the other day on the floor, and I think the ruling from the chair was that this was the way to do it if indeed we came to the end of the session and we needed to get a bill out and Appropriations Committee might not be able to meet, that this was the method that you could use to make sure that it would be heard on the floor. And that's why we stripped it out in the committee. And as it is right now, there essentially, because of the action in the standing committee, there is no appropriations in it. We're asking you to not to concur with the action of the standing committee. So, you know, that's where we're at.
Senator Von Flager.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to look it up really quickly here, but I do believe that we're supposed to send all bills with appropriations to appropriations. And that, you know, if you want to work this bill through, that's fine with me, too. But Rules Committee.
Sorry, are you calling for the Rules Committee to convene, Senator Von Flager? Okay.
We would need a ruling to appeal. So you would have to rule, for example, that is it is in order or that it is out of order, and then we will tell you whether or not we think you're wrong.
Okay, well, I rule that to be out of order then.
That the bill is out of order.
What's out of order exactly?
Oh good. The point of order that a bill without an appropriation, even though it says appropriation on the jacket, if you could restate the point of order, that'd be helpful. But basically, the idea that we could amend a appropriation out of the bill to avoid getting where you refer to Appropriations Committee, and that particular maneuver is out of line with our rules. And so, barring any specific reference to our rules, I'll have to rule that out of order.
Okay. I call for a Rules Committee meeting.
Out of order.
Okay.
Didn't you just rule me out of order? Or? Is that how I understood it? Did you rule a bill out of order, or did you rule me out of order?
I ruled the motion out of order. Sorry.
So you ruled me out of order, and I'm appealing to the Rules Committee.
No,
it's
not
friendly.
Stand at ease to the sound of the gavel.
Yeah.
Yeah,
really be
a huge. Maybe you saw.
Right, but the bill had an appropriation. It doesn't say that your amendment necessarily has
to be in the committee.
Right.
Or a report from this committee's appropriation. We don't have to. You'll have enough. We don't have to. It's the same
thing. It says may, and then it says shall. May be assigned to a standing committee other than appropriations, but then shall be referred to appropriations to see if Mason has an appropriation.
Okay, so Alan, does the vice president say basically that, you know, here's what the rules committee says and
right.
What? Okay. Okay. Committee of the Whole will come back to order. We have a report from the Rules Committee. Senator Von Flaiter, do you want to take this?
Chairman, I agree with you ruling me out of order. So let's go forward with this, and let's hope the amendment passes.
Okay, we are on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm going to ask you to vote for Division 2. That strips the money out. Members of the committee, there will be ample opportunity then, that's well within our rules, on a second reading amendment to then bring the appropriation back and have the discussion tomorrow on second reading. So, Mr. Chairman, on Division 2, I would ask you to vote yes.
Okay, any further discussion on Division 2? Seeing that, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no?
No.
Okay, that division passes. We have Division 1, Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, you can rule the senator from Sheridan out of order anytime you would like. Mr. Chairman, so Division 1 goes to page 5, and there's a provision in there, subsection C, that says the board shall not permit any gambling devices of any nature operation on the grounds or permitting any unlawful betting or permit any intoxicating liquors to be sold thereof. All this is already covered in existing statutes. If we take this out, it's consistent with the new duties of the State Fair Board, so I would ask for your favorable consideration and vote aye on Division 1 to Standing Committee Amendment 1 to House Bill 130 and would stand for any questions. If there's no questions, call for the question.
Any further discussion on Division 1? Seeing none, the question is on Division 1 of Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 130. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
Question on the bill.
We're back on the bill. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 130, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. House Bill 130 has passed committee of the whole. Senator Dockstetter?
Move.
Point of order, Senator Office.
Thank you. Point of order, just a little bit of discussion.
We don't have a formal rule which really dealt with that situation. When we looked at the re-referral, the concept there is that a bill may be referred to a committee other than appropriations, but if it has an appropriation, it shall be re-referred. So the concept, the problem that we had there was if the appropriation ended up landing on it, then the shall would have applied. There's additional information in Mason's, though. Section 384, re-reference of bills, numeral 4, when an amendment is adopted that causes a bill to have a fiscal impact, some states require that the bill be referred to a standing fiscal committee for further consideration. So that's the only additional information. So we might need something there, honestly, to decide how to handle that, not with what we did because we're within the rules for what we did. That's one point. The other point I would say is that we didn't have a formal action from the Rules Committee. We didn't have a quorum for the Rules Committee. So that really was just coming out and having a discussion, a recommendation. We're glad it worked out and that we didn't tragically die in a rule affair. But I just wanted to point out to the body that it doesn't look like we have a correct rule on that. We'll have to give it some more thought. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Dockstader.
Mr. Chairman, for third time. Move the committee rise and report. The committee of the whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
That motion carries.
Thanks, Brian. Hey, no problem. That was great. So the rest of us can probably leave, but Tara and Senator Nethercott will stay for the night. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
So I'll take privilege of the floor myself. Well, everybody that's here, if you have a committee bill that has something, that has money, please talk to the appropriations chair whether or not you should re-refer it so we don't run into this. Even if you took off the money, because my belief is if it says appropriations in the title, it should at least be talked to the appropriations chair and then get his blessing on the bill. So, Senator Hicks?
Mr. Chairman, we did exactly what you said and discussed this with the Chair of Appropriations and the entire Appropriations Committee.
Oh. Yep. Thank you. And I'm amazed that they didn't send it. So, we have anything left to do here? Messages from the House. Oh, yeah, you did better do the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 6, do pass. House Bill 163, engrossed, failed to pass the Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. House Bill 140, engrossed, do pass, amended. House Bill 194, engrossed, do pass, amended. House Bill 186, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 168, engrossed, do pass, amended. House Bill 130, engrossed, do pass, amended. Senator Boner, Chairman.
Senator Boner.
Mr. President, and I move for adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Yes. The Committee of the Whole report has been adopted by the Senate. We are at that order of business. I know everybody's excited. Signing of enrolled acts. Enrolled Act number 29, Senate File 30, was original Senate File 35.
Senate Enrolled Act number 29, being original Senate File 35, an act relating to defense forces and affairs.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 29, being original Senate File 35. I have so signed. Enrolled Act number 30. Oops.
Senate Enrolled Act number 30, being original Senate File 60, an act relating to highways.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 30, being original file Senate File 60. I have so signed. Enrolled Act 31, being original Senate File 84.
Senate Enrolled Act number 31, being original Senate File 84, an act relating to motor vehicle registration.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 31, being original Senate File 84. I have so signed. Enrolled Act 32, having been original Senate File 69.
Senate File Number 32, being original Senate File 69, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 32, being original Senate File 69. I have so signed. Enrolled Act Number 33, being original Senate File 63.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 33, being original Senate File 63, an act relating to public funds.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 33, being original File 63. I have so signed Enrolled Act Number 34, being original Senate File 111.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 34, being original Senate File 111, an act relating to property taxation.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 34, being original Senate File 111. I have so signed enrolled Joint Resolution Number 1, which was original Senate Joint Resolution 2.
Senate Enrolled Joint Resolution Number 1, being original Senate Joint Resolution 2, a joint resolution to commemorate the sesquicentennial of the signing of the 1868 Treaty of Fort Laramie.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Joint Resolution Number 1, which is originally Senate Joint Resolution 2. So signed. Messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, March 7, 2018, message number 258. Mr. President, Senate File 89, Local Government Distributions, passed the House on third reading, ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1. Message number 256, third reading failed. Mr. President, Senate File 43, Organ Donation, Training, and Timely Post-Mortem Examinations, failed to pass the House third reading. Ayes 26, noes 33, excused 1. Message number 260, third reading failed. Mr. President, Senate File 113, Community Development Districts, failed to pass the House third reading by the vote indicated. Ayes 19, noes 40, excused 1. March 7, 2018, message number 259, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 100, Economic Diversification Broadband Services, passed the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 46, noes 13, excused 1. Message number 255, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 40, Commercial Air Service Improvement, passed on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 40, noes 19, excused 1. Message number 257, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File number 58, Game and Fish Licenses, passed on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 52, noes 7, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting amendments. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Mr. Senator Dockstader, temporary majority floor leader, do you have a motion that clears the desk?
Well, yes, just a clarification, Mr. Vice President. He left the part about when we come back to work tomorrow morning blank. I generally start my day at 5 a.m., so.
10 o'clock. quickly.
All right. Mr. President, I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Thursday, March 8th.
Any announcements, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman,
not technically an announcement, but I just want the Senate to say that this is the first time in 40 years I've ever seen a bill passed by defeating a motion to rise and report in the final day. So you've made history.
Yes, we have, Senator Scott. First time I've seen it, too. Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, Select Water Committee will meet tomorrow in H-36 for interim topics. The same committee will meet at 8 a.m. on Friday in H-36 for the joint meeting.
Thank you, Senator Driscoll. Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice President. The Conference Committee on House Bill 40, Election Code Revisions, that's, I think, yourself, Mr. Vice President, Senator Scott, and myself, will meet tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock in H-37. And this is the sticker controversy. It's all about the bumper stickers, Mr. Vice President. So go in there with lots of adhesive.
Thank you, Senator Case. I thought you had taken care of that. Senator Burns?
Mr. Vice President, your committee number two, Appropriations, will meet at noon, recessed tomorrow, Thursday, in General Room L55 to discuss interim topics.
Senator Kinski.
Your Management Audit Committee will meet tomorrow at 8 a.m., Room L54, to consider the following, selecting a scoping paper topic to assign to program evaluation and an update on the program evaluation process. It promises to be a very good time.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number five will be meeting with the Light Committee from the House Thursday, March 8th at 8 a.m. in Jonah Room 236 to discuss and finalize interim topics.
Senator Boner.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. The Select Natural Resource Funding Committee will be meeting in L51 at tomorrow, March 8th, 8 a.m. to discuss interim topics.
Any other announcements? Seeing none, you've all heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned till 10 a.m. March 8th.